Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Time to talk to the Hall of Famer, one of the best to ever do it. He set the bar for beat reporting in Pittsburgh. Steelers insider Ed Bouchette. All right, Ed, let's say Sunday morning Ben Roethlisberger gets a second COVID test that comes back negative. Does he fly private to L.A. and start?
I wouldn't drag it out till Sunday morning, no.
Ed, as much as...
You know, maybe he should fly out there if he thinks he's going to get a... If he has a first negative test, fly out there, get the negative test, and be out there.
Are you even allowed to do
but
that?
But he would still have to fly out separate from the team if he were to do that, right?
Right. Yes.
You know, when you put it that way, Pony, it actually is a much more sensible plan.
We've all done it, you know, flied separately, right?
Like private? I've never been lucky enough to fly private, no.
Well, the problem is, I don't know who. Well, Thomas Tull could fly.
I was going to say Tull's got a plane.
Yes, he
does. Tull's got like three Gulfstreams, probably.
Yeah, the Steelers really don't have one. I don't think they can go that far without. Well, they have they share one with others. I don't think it's all theirs. But anyway. If he had a negative test and you think he can play, fly him out there Sunday morning, take the negative test number two, and play.
Ed, do you expect if he doesn't play that we are going to see a significantly different game plan offensively for Mason Rudolph than we saw last Sunday?
I don't know what to expect anymore, Chris, out of that offense. I mean, you let the one of the worst run defenses in the NFL dictate what you were going to do on offense last week. So I don't know what to expect. You know, you had a backup quarterback. You had two receivers hurt, and you decided to throw it 50 times. So I don't know who can predict anymore what they're going to do.
Ed, do the Steelers right now look at Mason Rudolph like they did Landry Jones, career backup, guy that can be a decent backup? Or do they look at him more like Neil O'Donnell, backup who turns into a starting quarterback?
I think they see him as a guy who could hold the position until they find the next guy. And I'm not so sure they saw Neil O'Donnell that way, even though they let him go as a free agent. I think that it's possible if Ben retires, Mason will be the quarterback next year, even if they would draft one, hold that seat for someone else.
I thought only the Pirates did bridge years. That is not an inspiring thought if Mason Rudolph's just kind of
position. It's one position, even though it's the most important one. I think they can win with him. I mean, almost did so a couple years ago, right, with him and Doc.
So well, almost is the key word there.
Yes, it is. It means they didn't.
Ed, you know what's interesting about that season?
But I don't mind what Ed said there if there's the caveat of they've drafted a quarterback. If it's a first-round quarterback and Rudolph's playing the first five or four or five games and then he's giving way to the starter. I'm much more okay with that than just they don't draft a quarterback and it's Mason Rudolph.
Why hamstring yourself? What if that quarterback you draft ends up being really good and in the games Rudolph plays, he's really bad and you lose a bunch, and then you're looking back saying, well, why did we sacrifice those games potentially when this guy actually was ready to roll here?
Well, see, I go back to when they drafted Ben Roethlisberger with the, 10th overall, 11th overall pick, 9th overall pick, somewhere around there. And the plan was it was going to be Tommy, then it was going to be Charlie Batch, and Ben was going to be third. But Batch got hurt in training camp, done for the season. Ben moved up to number two, and he's behind Tommy, and then Tommy gets hurt in the second game of the season. That's the only reason Ben started. Otherwise, he doesn't start that year. I think the Steelers have different plans than other teams to just throw a rookie right in there. I don't think they want to do that enough. The rookie is overpoweringly good early on. That's different. But I don't think they want to throw a guy right in and let them sink or swim.
I know all these guys are different, Ed, and I know that by bringing up one guy in particular here, I'm going to shed light on the fact that most of this year's rookie quarterback crop has actually struggled mightily. But if it's good enough for the Patriots to take Mac Jones, 15th overall, and just toss him right in, and they're 6-4,
cut Cam Newton,
and starting to play a lot better, if it's good enough for New England, why wouldn't it be good enough for the Steelers?
Well, it works sometimes. I just told you, Ben Roethlisberger, it worked. That wasn't the plan, but it worked. He went 13-0. There are others it doesn't work. And I think many times it doesn't work. Even the guy in Green Bay, he sat for a little bit, right?
Two years.
And Steve Young sat for a little bit. There's nothing wrong with that. That's how it used to be. I mean, Terry Bradshaw played right from the get-go, and he was terrible. And they were terrible with him. But, you know, they stuck with him. These days, they wouldn't stick that long with a quarterback who stunk like that.
Well, if you take Jay Glazer at his word, this is all a moot point because Tomlin doesn't want a rookie quarterback. And Glazer also, I guess, said that if Ben wants to play in 2022, it's entirely up to him, and compared it to Drew Brees' situation in New Orleans, Ed.
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, I've said all along that if he plays well, and wants to come back, they would want him back. But
it wasn't the if he plays well part. It was just if Ben wants to play, he'll play.
Listen, let's just say he plays terribly, and I don't expect that. Let's say he plays terribly over the second half of the season. He ain't going to want to come back, and they're not going to want him back.
Well, let's say it's status quo. Let's say you cut and paste his first half of the season into the second half, and he says he wants to play. Is that good enough?
Yeah, I think he's been okay. Yeah.
But what if you cut and paste his first half, his statistical first half, and against a much tougher schedule, they don't thrive down the stretch. They finish 8-8-1, which seems like their destiny, and they're not a playoff team. To me, you'd just be prolonging another year in NFL purgatory, Ed.
It doesn't mean they can't draft one and have him behind.
Well, the last time they drafted a guy with a first-round grade on him, Ben said he can go look in his playbook if he wants help.
Well, again, it depends on if you take Glazer at his word on Tomlin saying, I don't want a rookie quarterback, I guess.
Well, Jay Glazer speaks what Tomlin thinks.
Yep.
You can take it to the bank.
Well, then, do you think...
I agree.
There's total agreement on this side, Ed. Do you think that the Steelers would ever step way out of their comfort zone and pursue a potential trade for a guy like Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson this offseason?
No.
Ed doesn't think that.
No.
No, not those guys. I could see another one, but not those guys. I don't see them taking on either of those two.
Ed, did you happen to see any of the Tom Brady documentary on the 01 season that aired the other night?
No.
It's fascinating watching back 20 years later Drew Bledsoe talk about how painful it was for Belichick to bench him after that AFC Championship game in Pittsburgh and tell him that he was going to start Brady in the Super Bowl against the Rams. And I'm watching this, and go ahead if you want to jump in quickly.
No, Brady was a starter, and then he got hurt. That's when Bledsoe came in and beat the Steelers, right?
Right, right. But then after that, Bledsoe thought, I won the game. I'm the franchise quarterback. Brady's not 100% healthy. Belichick's just going to start me in the Super Bowl. And then he went back to Brady. And Bledsoe was so devastated by it, he blew off the Super Bowl parade. He went skiing. He wanted nothing to do with the Patriots and then got traded Tom Donahoe and the Bills. But I'm only bringing up that story because I think about Belichick making the decision, I'm going to bench my $100 million quarterback for a six-round pick quarterback, Tom Brady. And it's so hard for the Steelers to bench Devin Bush, Ed, or at least take snaps away from him. And he's not even a franchise quarterback. He's a linebacker that's coming off a torn ACL.
Well, they had been taking snaps away from him. They didn't in this most recent game, right? I mean,
which made no sense because he's not good against the run, and Spillane kind of is.
Right. But they were saying, Keith Butler was saying Spillane was better against the pass, right, that one day several weeks ago. When he was asked why Spillane was playing more in the nickel than Bush, right?
And I had somebody over there tell me that Spillane's more physical than Bush and is better against the run. So I guess he's maybe better at everything. I don't know, but he can't play.
That's a pretty low bar considering Devin Bush's level of play at the moment.
I mean, Ed, what do you make of the Bush situation right now?
He hasn't been very good. I mean, he's a disappointment. He had ACL surgery. As I have said and wrote, I think maybe that is affecting him not just physically but mentally. I've seen that happen with guys in knee injuries. He may be having a tough time getting over, you know, the whole ordeal. I don't know. I mean, we can't talk to these guys anymore. You know, when's the last time Devin Bush even talked to us? So I don't know. But he wouldn't be the 10th round. He wouldn't be the 10th overall pick right now. In fact, probably wouldn't be picked in the first round right now, right?
But should he be playing this much?
Well, who you got? It's not like you have Jack Lambert there sitting on the bench and Robert Spillane. Come on, guys. He's Robert Spillane. My goodness. You know, it's not the next great monster of the midway waiting to replace Devin Bush. I don't see the big deal.
Wait a minute here. I mean, when you're playing against a team that's one-dimensional and can't throw the ball at all, doesn't want to, and you have a linebacker that's at least decent at tackling people and hitting people, like when he hit Derrick Henry, I would think if there was ever a game that called for Spillane to get some snaps, it would have been last Sunday, no?
Look, a better run-stopping linebacker quit them, Vince Williams. He was better than Spillane. And
I would agree with that.
I've said all along that they should probably dial him up and see if he's still in shape. But I'm sorry, I can't sit here and argue that hard for Spillane playing over Bush. I just can't. I mean, I don't think the guy's that good.
Ed, what do you think is the main reason that this team was so bad tackling against the Lions?
Maybe they're a bad tackling team. Maybe we should just all come to that conclusion that they're not very good. Maybe this defense was overrated. They have lost players, and now it looks like they're losing more key players going out to L.A. You know, the two losses in the defensive line hurt them. Vince Williams retiring hurt them, I think. Getting rid of Ingram hurt them. It's not that good a defense. It really isn't. If you allow the Lions to gouge you for that many yards on the ground, you're just not very good.
Well, that would make it sound like to me, Ed, that has been, based on preseason expectation, clearly the more disappointing group, if not the worst group, of their two sides of the ball.
I would agree. I mean, not only can't they tackle, they can't come up with turnovers, right? That was their MO for a couple seasons there. And while T.J. Watt has been outstanding on the sacks and Cam Hayward has been outstanding, their sacks are way. They've led the league in sacks the last 4 years. And last I looked, they were like 10th, right, in sacks.
And I'm almost afraid to ask this next question based on the way you jumped down my throat regarding Robert Spillane, but what the hell, I'm going to do it anyways. Should Derek Watt play more against his former team on Sunday night?
Well, he should have been playing more anyway. I mean, if they're going to run the ball, and they paid this guy all that money, and they didn't pay him to run down under kicks, I'm sorry. They paid him as a fullback, and now they don't use him. They didn't use him last year, they didn't use him this year. I don't get it. He should be playing more. Plus, they're a team that doesn't have great blocking tight ends. Now, they put him on a wing a couple times. Put him there. You know, he can be kind of like a H-back tight end guy. I don't understand. Excuse me. I don't understand that at all. That not only did they sign him and not use him, then they kept him and don't use him. You know, they could have saved some money this year. If they decided they weren't going to use him. But, you know, to have a guy just run under kicks and be the second highest paid fullback in the league is ludicrous.
I wish I had a rebuttal to that, but it seems pretty cut and dried. I mean, I wish I also didn't have at least, like, a little bit of ammunition to think that they signed him in part to make his brother happy. I don't actually think that's the case. But it's
what
about
other
as,
justification.
It's
a,
yeah,
is there?
It's about as reasonable a justification as their non-usage of him allows you to have.
Yeah, I don't believe that for one bit that they signed him to make his brother happy. What made his brother happy was that big contract. You know, whether Derek was here or not, that big contract was.
No, I agree with you, Ed. But it's frustrating because their usage of him is so ridiculous for what they signed him for. I think
agree.
It leads people down the road of these farcical sort of theories.
Here's another one: the offensive line hasn't been very good. Yet Zach Banner, the guy they paid 2 years, $9.5 million to return, can't play, can't get on the field. Explain that one.
I can't. I'll give you another one right in your wheelhouse. Why are they paying Eric Ebron more than $6 million to attempt to hurdle over a guy where he can't even get more than 6 inches off the ground, Ed?
Yeah, I said way back when. They'd have been better off just, and he hasn't done much, but just signing Jesse James back and let Eric Ebron go. Instead, they kept Eric Ebron. Now, they didn't have Freiermuth, so they didn't know what – they didn't have anything at tight end, really, right? McDonald retired. It's either Ebron or nothing. Now, since then, Zach Gentry has moved up and has done okay. But I don't think they knew that back then. So they were almost put in a corner. Well, we got to keep Ebron because we don't have any tight ends. Well, that wasn't very creative, I don't think.
You know what makes me nervous for Sunday night's game? With all these new young guys out there, Ed, we've seen the Steelers go on the road and go places and have horrible communication issues. Half the defense is in zone, half the defense is in man. Butler's quipped about that. I'm nervous about that happening with all these new faces out there. And then you get back to the old, you know, question, chicken or the egg, who's even calling the plays in the first place, Butler or Tomlin, you know?
Oh, Mike Tomlin's running that defense. He is running that defense, and he's told you that the last couple weeks. He's finally saying it. Yeah, he's running the defense, and, you know.
He seems to say it more after they win, Ed. He said it a lot more. He was more open about that when they had beaten the Browns with a superlative defensive
effort.
Yeah,
and he also gave the cockamamie excuse that Dan Campbell calling plays really threw him off in that game Sunday because he didn't see it coming, Ed.
Well, whatever. I mean, whether he says it in wins or not, you know now he's the one running it, you know. Whether he says it during a loss, he said it during a win, you know he's the guy doing it. For whatever reason. But that defense isn't getting it done. I mean, like I'm repeating myself. Sacks
so why
down.
Not give the play calls back to Butler then?
I don't know. You'd have to ask Mike that on Tuesdays.
Well, Keith Butler spoke and did not seem very happy about their lack of tackling ability and their physicality maybe. And we read between the lines and thought, well, we know we have a good idea Tomlin's running the defense. If Butler was, maybe we'd be seeing Spillane more. Do you think Butler has a decent amount of say-so, in since he is a linebacker's coach by trade, like, which guys get out on the field, he or Jerry Olsavsky? Like, can they lobby Mike Tomlin to get more Spillane if they think they need more Spillane given the matchup?
Oh, yeah, I think they would. I mean, and I think he'd listen to them. I do think that. But I don't know what's going on. I just don't. I mean, I don't.
You know what, Ed? This seems like this team's in big trouble.
Well, don't tell Ed twice. Ed said stick a fork in him.
I know. I'm just synthesizing this entire conversation. It seems like they are in big, big, big trouble heading down this stretch of eight games here.
Chris, all you had to do is look at the last two games against two inferior teams at Heinz Field. One, they barely won. They, you know, pulled one out of their hat, and the other one they tied, right, against the still winless Lions at home. That's all you need to know, seriously. And now they don't play teams like that anymore. Those teams are behind them. The teams they come up with now are all contenders.
And they got an offensive coordinator who, if I had my druthers, would be back in college next year, right? Just like, what was that Rodney Dangerfield movie, Back to School? That's where he'd be.
Well, I don't know about strategy so much, but you throw 50
passes, Ed, in the rain. Everyone's
backup,
complaining about the weather. 50 passes.
With your backup quarterback, it was, number one pick at running back against the 26th ranked run defense. I rest my case.
Yeah, but look at the bright side, guys. He is such an engaging and fascinating interview.
That's a good point. He makes up for it every Thursday with his 15 minutes with guys like Ed. He really holds court.
He should throw a few dead gummets in to wake everybody up with the,
Ed, now that the world...
He's not a very good interview. He doesn't want to be a very good interview. I could tell just listening to him. He doesn't want to say anything. He just doesn't want to say anything.
He's the antithesis of you, and that's why we pay you the big bucks, and that's why I owe you a beer. Thank you, Ed.
All right, guys.
There you go, Ed Bouchette, our Steelers insider.
Local, just like Mike's.
Every opportunity is an opportunity to show, to prove myself to my teammates, to our coaches, that I want to be a starter, can be a starter. So I'm not going to put any pressure on it any other more than I did Sunday or in practice today. I'm my own hardest critic at times and to a fault, but I'm excited about it if that happens, if I'm the guy and we're going to go.
Mason Rudolph on what he thinks will be a second start this season, which it probably will be because of everything that's been reported on positive COVID tests with symptoms. No players come back in less than 10 days, and for Ben, he would be inside that window Sunday night in L.A. Colony, who was on with us a couple hours ago, heard those words from Rudolph and said, he sounds nervous to me, not projecting confidence. You could hear that. He didn't sound comfortable talking to reporters today.
I'm my own biggest critic, and Lord, do I have a lot of material to work with.
But even you could hear him stumbling over his words a little bit.
Sounds like a guy. Well, wait. When they asked about Ben giving any kind of pregame advice after the game on Sunday, no, that didn't happen. Like it was our friend Pompeiani, our friend Bob Pompeiani's little kind of word salad that we like to have fun with. I have said this about Rudolph, even not this particular time, but I've said this about him in the past. Every time I've heard him speak when he has a chance to be the man, even if it's like for a game, he comes off like somebody who says, okay, this is how a starting quarterback is supposed to sound. Let me try to pantomime that, right?
Yep.
This is how it's supposed to – these are the things you're supposed to say. Let me try that. Even the best imitations aren't the real thing, and his is not a particularly good imitation. So it's not even close to the real thing. And that's what I think you're getting here. You know what's been more troubling about this run-up to this game than Mason Rudolph sounding nervous there, right in that clip? We've asked how many people today, Ed, Colony. We kind of have just picked Steve Palazzolo's brain in general about Mason, right? All the way down to the nitty-gritty, the granular stuff. But we've asked, is this going to be a different-looking game plan for him? What do you expect to see? Worst run defense in the league in L.A. They average about 4.8 yards per carry allowed. That's terrible. What does anybody expect to see? You've got Najee Harris. You've got Zach Banner champing at the bit to get back. And nobody has any kind of defined idea what the hell it's going to look like.
I think that's because
Ed Bouchette,
Canada,
I have no idea what to expect.
I think that's because Canada still is largely an unknown commodity at the NFL level. He had that great year at Pitt, but he bounced around so much in college. To be a great major league pitcher, you need to have a second pitch. You have a great fastball. You got to have something that keeps hitters off balance. If you're Matt Canada, what is, outside of the jet sweeps and the bells and whistles, what is this guy's identity as a coordinator? And I think the problem is, from Sunday, is that we did not see an offensive coach adjust. And he was not held back by Ben Roethlisberger and Ben's big ego and Ben's pride, Kool-Aid manning in and saying, no, it's my offense, I'm going to do what I want. That was a blank canvas for Canada. And given the circumstance, backup quarterback, and the conditions, he never adjusted. So that's why I think we're talking to people that are around the team that are like, I don't know what this guy's going to do.
In that very same vein, and this is something that I know I'm channeling a thought process that I don't like when other people use, but I'll kind of cheaply go with it here. I grew up watching Steelers teams that, you know, football's a strategic game, it's all this, but it's also about imposing your will. And anybody that played it at the highest level, or really any high level, will tell you that. They always impose their will. Going against a great running back when they didn't allow 100-yard rushers, you're going to be the team that changes what you do. This is what got me about that game the most when I thought about it more. One of the worst rush defenses in the league, and just to a man, they all said, well, we didn't run near the goal line because they put a bunch of D linemen out there. They are dictating terms to you, and that's a problem.
So I'm going to give you a theory that I've heard, and this is interesting because we remember at Pitt, the fullback was allowed in the offense.
George Aston.
I think they threw, didn't like Ryan O'Neal like catch touchdown?
Ryan O'Neal won the Peisman Trophy for being an offensive lineman who scored a touchdown.
Right, so there was like incredibly creative plays.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know this to be a fact, but I've heard it from more than one person, so I will give it some credence. Remember when Ben said that the no-huddle playbook, like the catalog of plays in that situation, was so small?
Yes.
One of the things I have heard as to why they didn't use a fullback against the Lions, they didn't bring in Banner, they didn't use anybody as a sixth offensive lineman, is that they don't have a lot of plays in their playbook with that personnel. Like, they don't have plays that exist. They don't have names for them. They don't have a bunch of plays out of those looks. There might be a few, but very few,
but
not a lot.
They drafted a running back, a tight end who can block a little, who would be in maybe in those settings, right, to give you a real receiving threat, and not one, two offensive linemen who are starting. Their first four picks in this draft are starting on their offense.
And they have
goal-to-go type situations.
And they have a quarterback that loves no huddle. And I'm just telling you what I've heard that makes me think that this particular coach is way out of his league. That, okay, you want to put a fullback in and an extra offensive lineman? Fine. Then what do you do? What are the plays called? Again, you just draw them up in the dirt because they don't actually have names.
I know. No, people are going to get mad at me when I say this.
And I know that sounds overly technical, but I'm just telling you that's –
I'm going to give you the simple man's answer. You know what? Craig Riley, he was busy doing very important brand manager stuff today, but this is, I feel like, an answer Craig would give, and in this case, I'd agree with him. How hard is it when you go with that jumbo package down by the goal line, right? You have very limited space. You're probably trying to get 1-2 yards at the most. How clever does the play have to be?
I think they have that. I think, like, when we're talking about the goal line
Okay, inside the 5-yard line even.
I think those plays exist, but I'm saying, like, when you're at your own 30 –
no, I'm talking about the goal line stuff.
There's no excuse for after the Rudolph.
The dictating terms when they put six defensive linemen out.
Yeah.
But even then, even if you ran the plays at your own 30, I'll humor that point, that part of this here, since we were talking across purposes. Line up and just say, we're going to try to act like we're only getting 2 yards, but we're going to outman you at the line of scrimmage.
The Lions,
you might get four or
the
five.
The worst team in football with a coach who everyone thinks is just a gym teacher had six offensive linemen plays. Maybe
all
not a ton of them, but like it was in the playbook and it was something they had clearly worked on.
I just don't know. How much do you need to work on it sometimes if it's just put a hat, like a hat on a hat, and drive the guys backwards?
I just don't think they thought it was going to be their identity as a team this year.
Who cares?
They had no intentions on using Watt. They didn't want to use
a your identity.
They didn't want to use a nipple rubber this year, Chris.
Well, your identity as a team is that you're the team that didn't beat the Detroit Lions so far. Congratulations.
Now,
enjoy your identity.
What did you make of Bouchette saying he thinks that if Ben can continue on this trajectory and pretty much keep staying where he's at, if he continues to play this way and he wants to come back next year, the Steelers will
let him. I believe Ben has 10 touchdowns and 4 picks this year, I think, just off the top of my head. If I just double that for purposes.
20 and 8.
I want to know what the Steelers do if those are his numbers with a 90 passer rating, which is what he has, which is 2 ticks below league average, which is like 92.7 right now, okay? The Steelers are not going to go 5-3 in their last 8 games like they started their first 8 if that's the kind of quarterbacking he gives them. The teams they're playing
I think they'll say the quarterback's not the problem. I think that's how I think Ed's right. If Ben wants to play, they'll bring him back.
Then they will willfully be entrapping themselves in quarterback and NFL purgatory for another season. And they will have, I will go back, and you might as well, some of our listeners might actually prefer this, just play me on recordings from last year leading into this season, because I'll be saying the same things.
The only way I can accept that is if it's, and I don't obviously want this next Steelers quarterback to have this player's early career, but if they brought Ben back and then they drafted a quarterback in the first round, and it was the Eli Manning, Daniel Jones situation, which I think Eli Manning started 2 games and then got benched that year.
Okay.
And Jones played, like, he got hurt in December, but played like 10 or 11 games before he got injured again. That I could accept. But if it's like the same depth chart, well then.
Do you really want Ben?
If it's Ben, Mason Rudolph in 2022. And
do you really want Ben around a rookie just with the negative way he reacted to Rudolph? Even if he knows it's his real last rodeo next year, if it got to that point and he has somehow gotten one more year, water out of the rock, what's to say he wouldn't just be the what did Eli Manning think of the Daniel Jones thing? Was he pissed about it? Like, was that a fractured and frosty relationship between those two?
I don't think that Daniel Jones, well, Jones played for Eli Manning's college coach.
I know.
So I think in that sense, there was like he felt probably like
okay,
he had
so
to
then
be.
You got to draft Pickett if you do this because he played for Whipple.
Well, that's actually an interesting one. Yeah. That's a good point. Because Whipple and Roethlisberger are
serious.
Boys. Yeah. No, I think in that arrangement, that was Favre lovey-dovey fuzzy with Rodgers.
No, and that's the thing of legend.
And Rodgers is a Hall of Famer with a Super Bowl and a bunch of MVP
but
awards.
But I mean, look what happened to them when they tried to do that with Jordan Love. Rodgers, it was like the student became the master at being mean. Not that it matters. You should be able to handle a teammate not liking
I think Love
you.
Just stinks.
Well,
our picks to round out the show from the Rivers Casino Sportsbook. We'll get to tonight's game in a second. The Bengals are at the Raiders on Sunday. Cincinnati coming off the bye. They are a point favorite, Chris.
I think that these are two very similar teams, Pony.
In what way?
A lot of offense. Mm-hmm. Occasional, they have some good defensive players, but I would not call either one, especially Cincy now that they've been exposed a little bit, a good defensive team. And they're both reeling, coming off 2 losses after 5 and 2 starts. I am pretty torn on this game. When I picked it for Yard Barker, I was pretty torn on this game, but I am going with the team that I think has the better quarterback. That's the Cincinnati Bengals. I think Joe Burrow is already going to prove himself better than Derek Carr. The Bengals -1.
Now that Craig Rowley's our boss, sometimes he has to take off days to do boss-like things, get on conference calls, Zoom meetings, things like that.
Oh, he's on a big fancy meeting today.
So he blew us off to do that. Understandably so. Totally get it. So instead, he left his picks for Harry Callis, aspiring play-by-play man. Same name, but no relation to the Hall of Fame baseball broadcaster. And this is how Craig thinks the game will go between the Bengals and Raiders on the Harry Callis Radio Network.
So there's just over a minute left in regulation. The Raiders have the ball on the 42 of the Bengals. Fourth down. It's going to be a field goal unit coming out. Good snap, good hold. The kick is up and through. Daniel Carlson, 52-yard field goal. And the Raiders take a 30-20 lead over the Bengals. And the Raiders would hold on to that lead as they win 30-20 over the Bengals. +1, Craig has.
A little nitpick here. If the ball's on the 42, it would be like a 60-yarder.
Yeah, Harry. Uh-oh.
Bad math on my part. I'm so sorry.
Uh-oh. Lanny
no, the ball would have been on the 34. That's all. I know what he meant, though.
Professor
I like
Fratteri.
That he called like an important play, but in the scheme of things, a mundane play. A field goal to make it a two-score game with 30 seconds left.
I'm going to take the Raiders here. The Bengals. Both of these teams, I think, are very much in limbo. Are they going to make the playoffs? Are they going to completely fall apart? The Bengals' preseason expectations, of course, weren't that high, and then they blew out the Ravens and everything changed, but then they lost to the Jets. I don't know. I'll take the Raiders at home. I think this will be one of the few games this year where the Raiders won't have their stadium invaded by an imposing fan base and will have somewhat of a legitimate home field advantage. So I'm going to take Las Vegas.
So basically you and I think that game is the exact same thing, but we're just taking different sides.
Moneyball game, which means the pick is worth double. Mm. Here is Craig's Moneyball pick on the Harry Callis Radio Network.
And the Panthers have the ball on Washington's 4-yard line. Cam Newton is in the shotgun. Here's the snap. It's going to be a pass play. No, Cam's receiving pressure. He rolls toward the far sideline. Now he's going to run it for himself, and he's got it! It's a touchdown! The Panthers take the lead over the Washington football team. Scores 23-19, pending the extra point. And the Panthers will hold on. That's the Moneyball pick for Craig. 24-19, the final score. Carolina beats the football team.
Now that's a two-pointer. I am going to...
What is the actual number we're using?
Three and a half.
Okay.
Yep. I'm going to take the Colts in Buffalo plus 7. I think they can win the game. The Bills are 1-2 against teams that are 500 or better this year outright. That includes the home loss to the Steelers. They have gotten fat on bad teams. I think Jonathan Taylor runs the ball and either keeps it close or Indy wins. Colts for two.
It's funny. I told you I was torn before the segment on my Moneyball, and it was down to two games. That was one of them. Now, what do I do here? Do I ride with you so if we're both wrong, no foul? If we're both right, same deal?
But that opens Craig up for the two-pointer.
Right. Or do I have to roll
I gotta think
with
Malzies? We're at a casino. You got to roll the dice.
I'm going to take the Saints plus the two against Philadelphia. Here's why. Philly has run the ball for 200-plus yards two out of their last three games. Jalen Hurts is a big part of why. But now they have a little bit of kind of musical chairs. Boston Scott, Jordan Howard have been really good, but Miles Sanders, they expect him, I think, back immediately. Mm-hmm. You know what they're going against? The number one rush defense in the entire NFL. Ooh. 3.1 yards per carry allowed for the Saints. I think they stifle that running attack and force Hurts to beat him. I don't think he does. Saints, despite having, like, no wide receivers anyone's ever heard of, go in there and win outright in Philly.
Last game, Mulsey?
Last game of the day is, well, tonight's. The New England Patriots, Road Warriors, and 6.5-point favorites in ATL.
I think their record on the road this year is 4-0. And I don't think the Falcons have won a home game yet. However, I'm taking the Falcons here.
Might have some tremendous information.
I just think that the Patriots, the story, I think, outweighs maybe what they really are. Bad is when they lost to the Dolphins in week one. Everybody got super down on them. They should have beaten Tampa in Brady's comeback game, but the field goal went off the upright. And now I think it's swung wildly in the other direction where they score 50-plus points against the Jets. They beat the Chargers. We're getting to a point now where I think New England touch overrated. And I think with a rookie quarterback, a guy can go up and come down very, very fast. So I'm going to take the points here with the Falcons. Because I think they can win.
I don't think that this is a game where the Falcons are going to have much of a home field advantage because I think Patriots fans might travel in a short week.
I think you're right.
But this is also I'm borrowing from our new boss, Craig Riley. This is a bit of a zig when the zag, and it's also the recency bias that I'm going to roll against. Everyone saw the Falcons get just absolutely plastered, right, by the Cowboys by 40.
Yep.
Everyone saw the Patriots look impressive in victory, right? Everyone's automatically on, hey, Cordero Patterson might not go in a short week. All these things stacking up against the Falcons, I'll hammer Atlanta plus 6.5.
You're going to be able to hear the game tonight on The Fan. You're home for the NFL in Pittsburgh, the NFL on Westwood One. But before you do, let's hear it on the Harry Callis Radio Network.
The Patriots have the ball on their own 44-yard line. The score's tied 20-20. Falcons and Patriots tied up. It's third down, but the clock has stopped with 5 seconds left. The Patriots are going to run one more play. If they can't score, we're going to overtime. Mac Jones in the backfield. He gets the snap and shotgun. Looks for receivers. Down the far sideline, he throws, and the pass is caught by Nelson Aguilar. Inside the 20, he's got space. Inside the 10, he scores the touchdown. Walk-off touchdown, Mac Jones to Nelson Aguilar. The Patriots beat the Falcons and avoid overtime. 27-20, final score.
The extra point was kind of the important thing there with the hook and ball here, Harry.
I think they make him kick it.
Yeah, in regulation
they would. Yeah.
The question is, would Belichick take a knee on it?
Oh, great point. Harry, here would have been the all-important way to do that in a true Al Michaels degenerate gambler way, or Brent Musburger, you say. And now for some of our friends out there somewhere, this is a crucial extra point. All right. I thought Harry Callis did a very good job there. Two of Craig's picks involved Harry Callis having to deal with the hook.
Harry, job well done. I've gotten several texts from people that are interested in your play-by-play services. I will pass that information along.
Thank you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.